Welcome to the Build Up on Balls.ie in association with Ladbrokes. Please bet responsibly. Visit dunlewy.net for further information.
Le drop de Jonathan Sexton! Oh, ils sont foutus! Il passe! C'est terrible! Terrible! Il est là! Jonathan Sexton!
Oh, we're looking for another one. It's Canning once again firing it in from near the sideline. It's a miracle shot! It's gone over the bar!
This is beyond cruelty. This is sadism at its worst. It is beyond belief. That a team that gives so much that those fellas give today are on the wrong side of that result.
And fighting is there! Robbie Brady brings us all to our feet in Rio.
Welcome to the Build Up Podcast with Ladbrokes. This big weekend is finally upon us. The Rugby World Cup is here. I am joined by Mick McCarthy. Mick, the dilly-dallying is over. We're finally getting ready. And what a way to start this build-up podcast. We're going to be talking to Stephen Ferris today. We're going to be previewing Ireland against Scotland. We're going to be previewing the entire World Cup. We're also going to be talking to Kevin Doyle about what the hell is going on with football, because everybody's losing. Somehow there's been a load of matches for the last 7 days and every team has lost. I don't know how it's happened, but it is. We've got a packed show coming up and I'm very excited.
Would you argue, Mark, that it's the best sporting weekend of the year?
I thought this week, I was like, I can't go with that intro again.
It's not.
I was like, surely I can't.
The start of the World Cup is pretty bloody exciting, and you add to that a decent weekend of football, and there's obviously lots of other stuff going on as well, as we'll talk about. But you know, we're gonna take it down a peg or two. We can't say every week's the best week, but it is an amazing time of year. Though it does feel like there's a kind of a Christmas Eve every Friday.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And look, this is why we have the podcast. If this is your first time listening, this is, of course, the Build Up Podcast, where we get you hyped for the weekend sporting action in association with Ladbrokes. And if this is your first time listening to the show, be sure to subscribe. You can get us by searching the Build Up on Balls.ie and all good podcast apps, or indeed Balls.ie podcast. We'll find all our shows across the network. Mick, I don't know where to begin with this World Cup. Like, there's the Ireland-Scotland game, obviously, on Sunday. But on Saturday, we're looking at one of the best overall day. We'll talk about that later on in the show. The best overall day of games. We've got Chelsea against Liverpool, obviously, on Sunday as well. Looking forward to talking to Kevin about that. The only thing I would say is that Kevin, he has a lot of making up to do, because it's time to look back on how we did last week in our predictions. And he's going to be culprit number one.
I think that's a little bit unfair, actually, on our star weekly guest Kevin Doyle, former Irish international. No, but even actually, I'm only joking. I would say it if it was terrible. But here's the thing: he did a treble that worked out, was 37-1, and none of them came off. However, none of them were that far away either. Okay,
no.
So come 60 minutes or 50 minutes in the Premier League games, I was looking at live score, thinking, all of these are a goal away, right? So at the time, you had United beating Leicester 1-0. Kevin went for a draw. It was very unlucky not to get that, as we know.
If United don't get penalties in every single game they play,
yeah, and then hang on for 80 minutes. They're like the Ireland of club football. Right, then you had Burnley away to Brighton to win. That was a big shout, in fairness. Now, they got a draw, but they were losing. So that bet was kind of looked over from once Brighton scored, but they didn't score in the first half or anything like that. It was still alive at half time, and then we had a draw between Sheffield United and Southampton, that Southampton scored again midway through the second half in that game. That would look the draw for the whole game. Even after Southampton scored, it looked like it could survive. So none of them came off, but it wasn't, I would argue it wasn't that far away, but it wasn't I suppose the greatest start. It would have been nice to knock one on the board, but when it's a treble,
it's 37-1.
When it's a treble, two is as good as zero, you know.
Yep.
Three.
What else did we do last week? I don't think we cover ourselves in glory overall.
Do you know, we didn't cover ourselves in glory overall, but if you were, I'll go through it and I'll tell you why it wasn't as bad as first impressions may suggest, right? So we had a few bets on the All-Ireland Final, and it wasn't the greatest thing in the world. This is the All-Ireland Final replay, Dublin-Kerry. You wanted Dublin to win after extra time. That was 14-1. We didn't get that. Morris, very adamant that it would be the winner would be 4 points or less. He's gone for that in both football and hurling All-Ireland finals this year. It hasn't come off in either. That was evens. We had David Clifford to win man the match at 11-1. That didn't come off, but he did score over 3.5 points. So that was at least a win on the board, thankfully. I think that was 10-11. So, you know, we got our kind of our fake Euro back for that one. I had Brian Fenton man the match 8-1. Look, early on, we knew that wasn't going to be the case. So, not the greatest All-Ireland final in the world.
However, if you did accidentally listen to the previous shows instead of last week ones, you might have went with my prediction of Dublin minus 5 ahead of the original game and you would have been happy.
Yeah, but you didn't. Jason Quigley was on with us talking about the Tyson Fury fight. He went for 8 to 10 rounds. The 8 to 10 would be the stoppage. Of course, it went the full distance. Again, circumstances I kind of dictated, and I actually, you know, watched that fight with kind of renewed interest given our conversation last week. And Otto Wallen, what a warrior that man is! Like, he's in the conversation now in terms of the heavyweights. Obviously, Fury did beat him. He's probably not at that quite level, but like, I mean, he made us all sit up.
It was
and
funny.
Take notice,
it was actually
didn't he?
Jason went for that prediction, but if he had listened to his entire preview before that, he probably would have been tempted to go Wallen to go the distance. So yeah. He had issued all the warnings. He had said everything that could possibly happen in it. And then probably just, as I think everybody would have said, that Fury would get the stoppage. But no, Wallen definitely hung in there. And probably the fact that he hadn't fought in the US a proper fight, you know, like we're saying, Wallen had been declared a no contest. It was one of those things that people were kind of seeing him. They weren't really sure what to expect.
Absolutely. So, didn't win that one. And now we turn, Mark, to the NFL, where I had a treble against the spread that bloody won, baby. So that kept us in the black this week. If you look at all the picks, I would have had your big shout didn't come off as well, by the way. So that's another pick down that was. But the big shout we almost take.
I got two out of three in the big shout, though.
You did not bad at all. You had Liverpool to be ahead after 60 minutes, which they were, despite going 1-0 down. You had the New England Patriots minus 18.5 points against the Miami Dolphins. They won that game 43-0, I think it was, yeah. And you had Dublin Kerry to draw, which didn't look likely, except for at halftime when it was a draw.
Yeah, so that's so annoying, actually. I forgot that. I was like, Jesus, that, if I had Dublin Kerry halftime draw and the other two, it would have been, yeah, would have been nailed.
If ifs and buts. Anyway, so still no winner of our, and we had a look through all the entries and keep sending them in because some of them are brilliant and not that far off, but still no winner of the two cakes in a sports biography for the big shout. We'll talk more about that later. So if you take all of them and say an imaginary Euro and all of those bets, we will still be in the black because we had a 6-1 NFL spread win. With I had the Browns minus 2.5 against the Jets. That went up to minus 6.5, minus 7.5, even so at one stage, once Jets quarterback Sam Darnold went down with mono. Which I
of course,
still, yeah, of course, like just the most normal thing in the world. However, they still beat the spread either way. So I was worried that that might come back to haunt us, but it didn't. That one, the Jags plus 8.5 at the Texans. The Jags almost won that game. They went for a 2-point conversion to win it. Didn't get it, so lost by a point, but our bet was all good. And then the Chiefs, despite going 10-0 down, beat the Raiders 28-10. So I had them minus 7.5. That was a Pat Mahomes special that you would have seen just before you went to bed because he wrapped it all up in the second quarter on Sunday night. So that's not bad. That's not a bad start to my the NFL picks for this season. I'll do it every week. I probably won't get one again, but it kept us alive this week because, again, we've just in the black.
Yeah, exactly. And look, as we always mention, if you are having any bets on any of these, be sure to gamble responsibly. You can visit dunlewy.net for more information. Let's chat to Stephen Ferris. Let's get ready for this. Let's get hyped for this World Cup, Mick. And we're also going to ask him for some picks, not just for the Ireland-Scotland game, but also for the World Cup in general. Stephen, we'll get to this year's World Cup in a minute, but we couldn't pass up today. It's 8 years to the day since Ireland beat Australia in 2011, one of your finest moments in a green shirt. Just talk us through your memories of the day. What was it like? It was unbelievable for us sitting here back in Ireland watching it in the early morning, but to be part of that day and to be part of such a momentous occasion must be one of your most treasured memories in the sport.
Yeah, I think my biggest memory of the match is actually in the changing room after the game, and everybody just you know, elated and feeling good about themselves, put in a pretty good performance, got a result and a brilliant victory against one of the big nations, and you know, things were just in a good place. And you know, sharing a quiet beer in the changing room afterwards was just a memory that will live with me for a very, very long time. And nobody gave us a chance in that game, but we pulled out a superb performance. And you know, it's a performance personally that I felt that I didn't play brilliantly, but you know, obviously there's a few moments in that game that, you know, changed the game, gave the lads a lift. You know, the Will Genia tackle was earlier on and coming towards the end of the first half, but it just seemed to sow a seed of doubt into the minds of the Aussies and also give us a bit of a lift going in towards half time. And you know, it was a match where I kind of enjoyed every single minute of it, even though I made a couple of mistakes during the match. But yeah, it was definitely something that any Irish fan that you talk to that was watching it or was there at Eden Park that day, you know, the atmosphere and the way we played, just, you know, everybody just remembers that game for some reason. So, no, really fond memories.
Do you find that performance, that it was almost like a peak too soon for that team in that World Cup? Obviously, we all remember what happened once Wales came around. It's probably the strongest we've ever gone into a World Cup quarter final. And, yeah, you know, it obviously didn't work out against a good Wales team. Let's not forget, it wasn't like as if we just kind of didn't show up at all in the quarterfinal. But, you know, did you feel that there was sort of a, after that Australia game, that we hit our peak?
No, definitely not. Because we didn't really play an expansive game. We just took them on up front. We had a very specific game plan, and that was to keep it tight. I know we chatted to you before about the choke tackle and Les Kiss bringing that in. And, you know, using that to our advantage throughout the game. I think the massive difference from that Aussie game to the quarterfinal was I can't really remember having a specific game plan against Wales. You know, it was more or less go out there, play the way we've been playing, try and slow them down here and there. But against Australia, we had a couple of things that we targeted during the game, and one of them was Kane Healy against Kepu. He'd done a number on him, slowing the game down, really frustrating them, where against Wales that just didn't happen. And as the game went on, we kind of got like more frustrated, and you know, there were substitutions made. Was it Johnny Sexton was playing in the centre by the end of the match? And it just felt like we weren't all off the same page come the quarter final, and that was the big difference. And to answer your question about peaking too soon, absolutely not. You know, I felt like there was a lot more to come from our side in terms of our attacking ability. It was good to kind of keep building that momentum, but it just didn't happen for us in the quarter final. And as I've said many a time, our big game players, myself included, didn't turn up on the quarter final. And we've nobody else to blame but ourselves and everybody else who was involved in that squad to you know, reach a quarter final and then probably put in your worst team performance during the tournament. Because you said there that, you know, we not that we got beaten off the park, but we did play it. We didn't really, you know. You look at Priestland, the kicks that he missed, we could have been dead and buried long before the final whistle. So I think Wales were very worthy winners in that day, and they certainly had a more specific game plan to beat Ireland than Ireland did against to beat Wales.
Speaking of Wales, we haven't spoken to you since we beat them again in the final game of the warm-up series. It's been a roller coaster a few weeks. Get ready for the one minute we were all really hopeful for Ireland's chances going into this World Cup. The next minute we're pretty down in the dumps. Now we're back up again, and then there's a couple of injuries creeping in. Where do you think Ireland are at the minute? Where this squad is? Injuries aside, maybe I think overall the squad's in a much better place than after that England game.
Yeah, I think it is. You know yourselves, you're keeping up to date with all the journalists that are out there, and you know, seeing what's kind of happening on the ground. Where for us, you know, here back home, we're just kind of getting snippets of what's happening behind the scenes. So you see the Scottish lads are out playing golf. I think where they're at, you know, the big golfing resort, they've been really enjoying the first week in Japan. Where I think you flip it over, and Ireland seem to be doing a lot of training. They've been, you know, really knuckling down, and you know, it's been all work, no play. I know they get into Tokyo, and a few of the lads were at the sumo wrestling and stuff, but it just feels that Ireland are just trying to knuckle down and make sure that they get off to a good start against Scotland, and you know, and then there's a couple of games where they maybe get a bit more breathing space and a couple of longer layoffs between games. So yeah, it's a funny one. It's just like a seesaw. One minute we're up, one minute we're down. And as an Irish fan, and I just hope that we can stay up there and that we don't have a massive fall again, because you know, something when you're one of the best teams in the world, to stay at the top is you need consistency. And if Ireland get off their rocky start and, you know, get beaten against Scotland, and that seesaw swings again, and the next thing, the media, the fans, and that negativity creeps right back in. And look, I've been there myself, guys. The players do feel it, you know, of course they do. After that 57 points defeat to England, you know, the lads would have felt a lot of pressure, a lot of strain, from not only their peers and the management, but from the media, from fans, supporters, walking down the street, going for a cup of coffee. Ah, oh, geez, lads, you get beaten 57 points. What's going on? What's happening? You know, just your Joe Blogs that are really keen to get stuck into you. So it's vitally, vitally important that they put in a performance and get off to a winning start against Scotland, and try and keep this going and make sure that seesaw doesn't flip the other way again.
On that note, what would you rather in terms of that sort of, you know, the Scottish players maybe going out playing golf, just, you know, maybe unwind a little bit, try and take their mind off it, whereas the Irish players are a bit more concentrated. That week before a World Cup, everybody here is excited, obviously, just to be part of watching it. But if you're a player there, do you just want to try and get, you know, get that first game under your belt? Are you trying to switch off, or do you want to focus not solely on that game that's coming up?
Yeah, I guess getting the balance right. I suppose it's different within the camps. Look, there might be a team manager within the RSU or in the Irish squad at the minute that says, okay, guys, we're at a World Cup here. This rein back the social media. You know, it's not be posting every 5 minutes that you're going to the toilet to take a crap, or you're, you know, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
it's you know, you gotta kind of you gotta be streetwise with the way you go about that. Where other teams might be, you know, a lot more vocal on their social media and what they're actually getting up to during the World Cup. So there might be protocols in place from the Irish management. There might be a lot more downtime than everybody thinks, but we just don't know what, you know, just reading between the lines at the minute. They just seem to be knuckling down and getting on with it. And unfortunately for Ireland, at the minute they're answering questions about injuries, and instead of like, oh, with a fully fit and healthy squad ready to take on Scotland, we're excited. Every media call that I'm watching on the internet seems to be about injuries and players that are unfortunately struggling to make games. And you know, one of those being Robbie Henshaw, and now Rob Carney's popping up. And you know, it's just when you're reading the press and reading the news, it's information that you don't really want to take in. You want to take in that they're fully loaded and ready to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I was going to talk about next, actually, Stephen, because, you know, we're hearing like Andy Farrell did a press conference where he says that everybody except for Robbie Henshaw is available for selection. But then there's also talk, I know the Independent have, that, you know, the chances are we're not going to risk Kearney and even Keith Earls this week. And you're suddenly thinking, like, you know, Kearney and Earls, we're basically talking about the back three there. There's not a huge amount to cover. Yeah. You're looking at, obviously, Stockdale's nailed on, but you have to bring in Larmour and Conway there. You know, probably it becomes Chris Farrell on the bench then as the only kind of available back three person, which means that, you know, you're probably looking at Ringrose covering that back three over the course of the game. And suddenly just Ireland feel very, very light in the back five, don't they? And
they do.
And inexperienced as well, in a way. Like, you know what I mean? If you're talking about losing Kearney and Earls, that's just far from ideal.
I know. And I suppose it's like every position. But when you lose one, you can kind of go, oh, yeah, we'll be grand. But when you lose two, and then, yeah, we'll rest them. Like, you've got Henshaw, Earls, and Rob Kearney. And after the England game, everybody's writing Rob Kearney's done. He's finished. He's too old. He's this and that. And then you watch him in the game against Wales, and he's just so switched on. And he, to me, hasn't lost any pace. If anything, he looks as sharp as ever. And he just needed a couple of games under his belt. And he's the biggest loss, I think. I think they can cope with missing Henshaw. They can play Ringrose in the centre. I think we can cover Earls for a couple of games. But Rob Kearney at full back, you know, Finn Russell on, if he's on his kicking game, where we have putting spiral bombs up on Jordan Larmour's in the 22 and saying, right, let's see how you get on here, big fella. And, you know, the bounce of a ball can be very, very cruel in the game of rugby. And, you know, I think they will absolutely target that area. We watched Lorimer against, was it Argentina a couple of years ago or 18 months ago, and he didn't play particularly well fullback. And I just feel that, you know, Ireland can be slightly exposed there if Rob Kearney's not fit. Now, there's loads of travel, you know, keep jumping off planes and, you know, sitting on an aircraft for 15, 16 hours, straight on the rugby pitch, in the gym sessions, different beds, sleeping conditions. Hopefully it's just a tightness, and he's able to, you know, be getting massages and physio 2, 3, 4, 5 times a day, be in the swimming pool, be stretching. They won't rush him back. But at the same time, you know, Ireland with no Rob Kearney, I feel, is a lot weaker than Rob Kearney being in the squad.
If they are available and, like, you know, say, like, maybe could play a quarter final or whatever, like, but I suppose it's in one way it's an element of Schmidt's kind of trust in the overall squad, and he knows that the 15 that he can put out there, you trust them to win it. But at the same time, like, with all due respect to Japan, and that's going to be a mad game in its own way, this is kind of the only game that matters for the next month. Ireland need to win this game.
Yeah.
And it's like, it almost should be treated as a knockout, shouldn't it? Because we honestly do have a good 4 weeks before the next major, major game.
Yeah. And, like, if Ireland beat Scotland, I know things can happen, but they're more or less guaranteed a quarter final place. So it takes all the pressure off. If guys are kind of niggles, you can rest them, and Rob Kearney can take a rest for a couple of weeks before coming back in towards the quarterfinal week. And I just think this is a real make or break game for Ireland. And if Rob Kearney's 90% fit, then I think Rob Kearney 90% fit is better than playing Jordan Lorimer fullback. And as long as there's, you know, no chance of him further tearing his calf or something, if it's only a bit of tightness and he's still able to train fully, but he just feels it a wee bit, then I would go with him, and Rob would probably want to play. I think Joe in the past has been the type of coach where if you're not fit, he will select somebody else. And, you know, if Robbie Henshaw is out for 2 or 3 games, then if that's the case, then I was expecting him to send him home and bring out somebody who's going to do the job. But I think it's got to the stage now where we are slightly thin in a few areas. Joe has a couple of his favourites, that's for sure, that lads that make the team tick. But, you know, they gotta get off to a fast start, and they gotta play a full team, and they gotta make sure that they get a result. Performance doesn't matter a damn when it comes to World Cup rugby. Yes, maybe in these World Cup warm-up games, we want to see a performance. We want to see guys with confidence, enthusiasm, you know, getting around the park and looking sharp. Ireland win by 1 point, it's happy days. We're on to the next game. And it's just about taking it game by game and making sure that you peak at the right times. And I think Ireland, just to go back to your point there, guys, they need to get off that flying start, and they need a victory against Scotland.
I suppose if there were no injuries, the main selection debates coming up to this game would have been the second row to an extent, and obviously the back row as well. Who would you go with there in terms of probably the debate as you go with Henderson and Klein, and then the back row? I think no one's really sure. Maybe, you know, does Stander start? Could you possibly put O'Mahony to 7? There's a couple of question marks there still to be answered.
Yeah, I think it really depends on what opposition you're playing against. Would I be playing Josh van der Fleer against Scotland? Absolutely. Would I be playing Josh van der Fleer against South Africa in a World Cup quarterfinal? I'm not so sure I would. I think I'd maybe play Pete at 7 and go with another big lump at 6 with Jack Conan at 8. So that's the way I would go with it. You know, the back row for me against Scotland is van der Fleer, O'Mahony and Conan. I don't think Standard done enough in a number 8 jersey to leapfrog Jack Conan and O'Mahony, who we all know is such a leader, can play 6 every single day of the week and not even think about it. He's a great line-out option. So I think you'll go with that. Right, the second rule, again, we just need banker balls against Scotland. If we can win our set piece, get 85-90% of our line-out balls down to Johnny Sexton and give us a platform to springboard off, then we will do really well. But, you know, Scotland are going to come after that line out like you wouldn't believe. I think they're going to throw 3 pods up in the air at times. They're going to be really smart and really cute. And who's your best second row combination when it comes to winning ball? Is it Klein I don't think so. Everybody's saying, oh yeah, Klein's a big lump, he's a hard man to lift. For God's sake, like, he's a second row, he's jumped from the line out since he was 14, 15 years of age. This guy's a good line-out operator, we just haven't seen enough of him, and he doesn't get into the air as often as we would like. So I would probably go with Ryan and Henderson. I think they're just two athletes, but what does Klein bring off the bench? And again, when it comes to South Africa in a quarterfinal or New Zealand in a quarterfinal, you probably go with Ryan and Klein in the second row and bring a madman and Henderson off the bench for half an hour to go out and create absolute chaos. So yeah, I think it's just whatever team you're coming up against, we might see a few different combinations.
What about Scotland then? We'll talk about predictions in a minute, but just even seeing that they're plus nine on Ladbrokes for the handicap, and you know, like, it's funny because like, Townsend's a good coach. We've got like some really, really good players there. It feels like we've been waiting for the Scotland breakthrough for about 10 years at this stage. You know, that they've been coming and the club game's getting better. But it never really seems to, it never seems to come true. But, you know, there is still that worry that there is some good players there and they could catch it on the day. What do you think we have most to fear from them this Sunday?
I think that you just don't know what you're going to get is right. And you know, it's hard. They're a team that's very hard to prepare for because they do mix it up so much. And if somebody like Finn Russell has a worldie of a day, you can be sure that you're probably going to walk into the team rooms after a pretty, you know, hard defeat, because he does make the Scotland team tick. Hogg, we all know how dangerous he is if you kick loosely to him. Hamish Watson, if he's on his barnstorming self, he runs around smashing boys and creating havoc. You have big second rows in there that will cause disruption in the line-out, and if they can get their scrum going, they really are a match for anybody. But it's just not knowing what they're going to bring. We all know Glasgow and Edinburgh, to a certain extent, like to play rugby. They like to throw it around, and you know, it can be dangerous at times. But you know, that 9 points, I think that's a huge, huge point difference in a game that's more or less, if Scotland win it, they're guaranteed a quarter final. If Ireland win it, I think it's going to be tight. I think it's going to be very, very tight, and I can't see more than a score either way winning it. So yeah, Scotland, it's just you just don't know what they're going to bring, and they've got individual brilliance in some of the players, and maybe to their detriment, they play as individuals sometimes, which can be their downfall. And you know, like if Finn Russell would just go off on his own bat, and that's not only in attack, that can be in defence as well. And yeah, they can be vulnerable at times, and I feel if Ireland can play a very pragmatic game and have a really good game plan in place, that they will win this game. But at the same time, I feel that a 9 points difference in the spread is massive, considering what's at stake for this game.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing is the weather as well. If it's wet and windy, and as you were mentioned, putting balls in on top of Larmour or whatever, that can just completely change up the situation as well. But I'm going to put you on the spot here as well, now that we have you. We're obviously very excited going into the start, finally getting this World Cup off. Who's your selection for winner?
Winner of the tournament?
Yep, overall.
Oh, geez. I'm going to go for a South Africa-New Zealand final.
Well, and who's going to win that one?
I'm not going to let you ask me how New Zealand or South Africa get to the final, because I know we're going to play one of them. So quarterfinals.
Yeah, so Ireland are out the quarterfinals one way or another. New Zealand 11-8, not surprisingly. But South Africa are 4-1. Ireland have actually slipped to 10-1, which is interesting, because when we started doing this a few weeks ago, Ireland were kind of knocking around the same as England and South Africa, kind of 5-6-1, and England, South Africa have jumped up, Ireland have slipped down. I think it's probably a realistic position that we're there with Wales on 10-1. It's far from non-contenders, but it's also a realistic top three there that we're looking at going into it.
That's the exact same as me. Ireland are world number one rankings point, but I think realistically we're probably 4 or 5. You know, South Africa, New Zealand and England, the way they've played over the last few weeks, I think they're the teams to beat. England's run in this World Cup is going to be very difficult. They're going to have to play 4, 5, 6 games on the bounce of a real high quality, where Ireland can kind of get away with a couple of games in the group stage. So, yeah, I just feel New Zealand and South Africa, they're going head-to-head, obviously, on Saturday, and then they can more or less take the foot off the gas slightly until the quarter-final stages, where they have the squad depth, they have the individual brilliance, they have the power, physicality, their set pieces seem to be pretty strong, both of them. They've got players to come back in. You know, Brodie Retallick, when's he going to be back as well for New Zealand? Obviously a massive player. So, yeah, I just feel that Ireland, where the bookies have them at the minute, is probably about right. And, you know, that's, I think everybody's thinking, it was more or less we were all brought back down to earth after that 57-point defeat to England. I was kind of a leveler of where we're going, because we had a strong enough team out that day. And yeah, I just believe that Ireland just need to get momentum going in this World Cup if they're going to, you know, get that monkey off their backs and break that duck of getting to a World Cup semi-final.
One last and a lot more difficult prediction for you. Who's going to win top try scorer? We're looking at Seve Rees here as 6-1 favourite, but it could be like picking names out of a hat.
It could be, yeah. I think somebody was saying this, like Russia are shipping a hell of a lot of points, like, you know, a serious amount of points. And somebody, like, if Stockdale started a match against Russia, he scored 5 tries, like, you know, he really could. So I think Stockdale wouldn't be a bad shout.
10-1, it's a good one.
Yeah, 10-1, he's not a bad shout. Colby for South Africa, maybe. Obviously, who else? Maybe. Let me see. What's May? What's May sitting at?
May and for Colby England? Are both 12-1.
They're both 12-1, so yeah. They're outside. Again, like, yeah, England's run may be slightly different. Do you know what? Stockdale, the amount of luck that man has had, he should have done the lottery a couple of years ago. Probably would have won it.
Yeah,
he's unbelievable, and it would not surprise me if he came out as the top try scorer, the best player in the World Cup, and for Ireland to win the World Cup and him to win the winning try, get the winning try.
Why not?
So I'll go Stockdale 10-1. Why not?
Good stuff. Now he's cut that hair. That's and got rid of that questionable goatee.
He's cut the hair like guaranteed now.
He lost all his powers when he grew the hair out, but he's back to kind of the try scoring machine now again since he chopped it off.
Well, look, Stephen, thanks very much for taking the time to chat to us. We look forward to it's finally we're getting underway, says you. It'll be great to chat next week after a game under our belts.
For sure. Cheers, lads.
Great to chat to Stephen there, Mick. I'm excited. Finally, do you know those warm-up games, like we're saying, it's a roller coaster and it's a needless roller coaster of emotion because they're all games we're going to completely forget about by Saturday.
We were talking about the previous warm-up matches all the way over the last few weeks, and without, like, it's like fighting against your own brain, because at one point I'm like, yeah, but I've watched these matches, I have to take something out of them, and then the other part of me is going, I can't remember a bloody thing. I kind of remember Ireland playing France on like a Saturday night in somewhere in the south of France in a match, and kind of like being at a party and sort of half watching it, and Ireland were getting hammered, you know, and it making absolutely no difference to anything. Yeah. I think that might have been 2011 World Cup when we went to top the group and beat Australia. We just talked to Stephen about it, you know. It's just like,
I think we lost every warm up game.
Total nonsense, like.
Yeah, but look, we're here now, and finally this is kicking off on Friday morning. But then, look, Japan and Russia. That's one of those that, because it's the first game of the World Cup, you'll get excited for, even though you wouldn't probably look if it was on in your backyard of a normal day. But, you know, it'll get us through. The excitement of the World Cup start will get us through that.
It'll be nice now to have a World Cup soon that doesn't have Russia in the first match, won't
it? I was saying that earlier on. I was like, it's hard to get excited for the start of a World Cup when Russia's played in the first game. But should the football World Cup was the same. But then
it's hard to get excited.
Yeah, exactly. Come Saturday, what a day. You've got Argentina against Fiji. You've got France against Argentina, and then you've got New Zealand against South Africa. And it's all over by lunchtime. The weekend's still ahead of you by the time that's finished.
I did this on World and Union. It was like, this is what you have to do, right? You get up 5:30. You're not going to do it later in the tournament, but you can do it at the start of the tournament. It's all exciting. And Australia-Fiji is a really good game as well. You get up, you get a coffee. I know you won't do it, but you know you can do something else. I'll have a coffee, right? I'll watch that match, get the way through it. Then, before France and Argentina, I might have a bowl of cereal at that stage, you know, because you'd be going. And then as you're building up to, you know, you get the fry on in between France and Argentina and New Zealand, South Africa, you may have another coffee, keep you going. All over by lunchtime, you're well fed, you've had a lovely morning sitting in. You might even pull the curtains at some stage.
Well, I wouldn't do any of that. I listened to that on the rugby show and I was like, well, I'd have fainted 30 minutes into the Australia-Fiji game if I hadn't something in me. Some bit of sustenance. You could also do what you did, Mick, which is book your NCT for the Saturday morning and miss it all.
I didn't book the NCT. It was booked, but then I have to be the one to go and do it for it. Look, we won't get into it in case the wrong people are listening, but I'll figure something out.
You're going to be chatting to Stephen on Friday as well. Friday afternoon, we're going to have another special preview show.
Yeah, Stephen's going to be in for a World Cup preview with us in studio. He's going to be in a couple of times over the course of the World Cup. We're going to have that on our YouTube channel and across Balls of the social media channels. So tune in for that. There's going to be some pretty good stuff in that as well. We're going to be doing that with Ladbrokes. Again, just as a kind of a little add-on to our build-up podcast between now and the end of the World Cup, we've got a few exciting guests as well that are going to be coming up on that show.
Ladbrokes are also dropping a €1 free bet in everybody's account if you sign in this week. You can use it on anything, but why not use it on the Rugby World Cup, and why not use it on Stephen Ferris' prediction of Jacob Stockdale to finish top try scorer? Let's be a bit patriotic here. 10-1 is a great use of a euro free bet.
Do you know what? It's a euro free bet. Why not put it on a 10-1 shot? Come here. I'm loving the World Cup being in Japan. I'm loving waking up in the morning at 6 o'clock. It's always bad news before the World Cup, but you're waking up and you're like, oh, so and so's injured, or oh, there's been a press conference. What? And you're just it's a little bit kind of confusing, like,
especially when it's in Japan. It's like so and so's gone home from the World Cup.
Yeah, so that's what I was thinking. It was bringing back a little bit of memory of during the 2002 World Cup, I was doing my Leaving Cert. But obviously, pre the 2002 World Cup, I was kind of like, you know, getting up for organized study sessions and whatever else everybody does the week before, 2 weeks before the Leaving Cert, going into school for grinds that end up as mass football pitches, football matches, 40-on-40 out in the yard was one of. Anyway, I'm going off point here a little bit, Mark. But I do remember it was seemingly every morning my mom would come in to wake me up and it'd be like, Roy Keane's gone home. And it'd be like out of nowhere. And I'd be like, what? What are you talking about? What? Roy Keane? Why? You know? And then it'd be next day. We're going, my mother doesn't speak like that, by the way. She's not a 60-year-old woman from the country. But she knocks, she'd lock in and she'd be like, Roy Keane's gone back. Wait, what? And this was just every morning. There was just, you would wake up bleary-eyed to a dark room to hear that Roy Keane had done something else. It's funny that all these years later, you're still here. You're still waking up to news about stuff Roy Keane has done. But nothing as dramatic in Japan at the moment, but it does bring back some kind of nostalgia to sort of wake up to hear all the overnight rumours.
One of the other things about that World Cup as well that I distinctly remember is like a short, you know, when like, say before a game, say it was before the England game, I think on ITV or whatever, and they've got some packages that they've been filming throughout the week when they're just, you know, cutting away from studio. And one of them was like a short outside thing on all the Japanese fans who are getting the David Beckham mohawk that like it was going into barbershops and stuff. And I'm just so grateful that Jacob Stockdale has cut that hair, because that's the last thing we want to leave on the poor Japanese.
They've enough problems. I don't know what to say.
Anyway, let's talk football with Kevin Doyle. Kevin, last week we spoke on the show wondering would players be disheartened going in to play the likes of Liverpool and Man City. And now 7 days later, both of them have lost in the intervening period. So what do we know about football, says you? But we're looking at Liverpool losing last night to Napoli, got into a big game of the weekend against Chelsea. Did Napoli actually find something that people can get at with that Liverpool defence in terms of that high defensive line they're playing, attacking fullbacks, and it's something that Chelsea, who are scoring a lot of goals, might be able to exploit as well?
Possibly. Listen, Napoli are a good team, and Liverpool are going to Napoli. It's not going to be easy, no matter how well Liverpool are playing. It's going to end at some stage. Ended last night. So, I don't know. Listen, it's coming back from there as well to go to Chelsea, away to Chelsea. It's a tough two fixtures. You know, away to Napoli and come home and meet Chelsea. But Chelsea also got beat during the week. So, you can look at it any way you want. I don't know what I'm talking about, obviously, because I was all over Man City winning comfortably at Norwich last weekend, and saying that was going to be a nice return to the Premier League for him after the international break, and proven wrong, and completely wrong as well. Norwich were fantastic against Man City last week. So, listen, Liverpool are a very good team going to Chelsea, but Chelsea are playing a little bit better than they were. Frank Lampard seems to be starting to enjoy himself. You know, you'd wonder whether that'll affect them, the penalty situation during the week with Chelsea, whether the players are going to be a little bit on non-speaking terms. I've been involved in a few of them, and it usually ends up in an unhappy camp for a couple of weeks. So interesting to see if they get over that quickly. Ross Barkley seemed very confident coming on and grabbing that ball just off the bench. Took it nicely over the bar. So there's a few different factors coming into play. Yeah, you could make a reason or make a theory behind any of them for who to win, but you still have to go with Liverpool, I think.
Yeah, probably you could expect, the one thing we could expect probably are goals. You mentioned Norwich there. Like, what a display with them last weekend. I think you're being a bit harsh on yourself, because I think everybody would have predicted a comfortable Man City win there. But, like, is that something that you've seen that with some teams before, where they come up from the Championship, they've got a great early start, but it's very hard to keep that momentum going. But the way Norwich are actually playing football, it's like they're playing in a way that everybody knows what they're at. Obviously, there's so many injuries as well. It's the system more than just, although Pukki's doing brilliantly, more than just one player. It's actually the fact that the belief they have in the way they play, and that they should be able to keep this up throughout the season.
Yeah, well, like there's just a highlight. There's a highlight reel of some of their passing under pressure. I was watching the other day, and how they got played out from the back against the team who are usually the ones doing that. And people were pressing them really high, and they just weren't fazed. Norwich just played it out. Calm as you like, one touch, two touch, little fixer in the corner, and they were, at times, you know, they were doing Man City what Man City do to other teams. So they deserved that win. They just sit back for 90 minutes and take it. They went out and played, scored some very good goals. Can they do it for the season? I don't know. Listen, by looking at that, you think they're going to be safe, and they really safe. You don't know what happened. You know, they hit a bad run of form or whatever. Pitches won't be as good in a few months. They might be able to play quite as well. Who knows? But I really enjoyed it. The one worry for them I would have is the goals. I think we said it, how many goals they concede. They conceded two against Man City, but they scored three. They score goals. They conceded the most in the league now after five games. If they can tighten that up a little bit, they're always going to put themselves at risk because of the way they play. It brings great reward, but it brings a bit of risk. But it's enjoyable. It's good to watch. It's nice to see someone, you know, proving us all wrong. And making Man City work very hard, not just Man City playing it around them and making them look like fools, but making Man City look like fools at times. It was nice to watch.
You must be wishing you'd be able to be out on the pitch these days with the way that defences are trying to play out from the back. Now, if you look at Otamendi's mistake, so the same with Arsenal as well on Sunday. It's a striker's dream.
It'd be nice to be on the pitch on the end of a mistake, but you have to work so hard to make those mistakes and force the errors. The teams are pressing so high. Working really hard at it, really organised. It doesn't just happen. Mistakes don't just happen. They're forced. They're forced into little corners. It's a plan. It's the number of players working together to put them in positions where it makes teams make mistakes in dangerous areas. Norwich seems to be so well tuned into how they close and how they press out the pitch and win that ball back in dangerous situations. It takes a lot of work. It just doesn't happen overnight. They really seem to be perfecting it.
Not to dwell too much on Norwich, Kevin, but I'm just like, you know, I'm an Aston Villa supporter who watched the Championship pretty closely last year, and it seemed like, you know, that Norwich were always the team who scored late. They always scored a lot. They won the Championship, and it still feels like everyone was talking about Sheffield United and Villa this season, whereas like this team is they scored 96 goals, I think, in the Championship last season or something like that. They're obviously scoring a boatload again since they've come up. It's brilliant to see a team just sticking to their guns like that, though, and kind of going for it. And even if they do like end up losing a load of matches, Kevin Keegan style 4-3 or whatever, like they're going to bring a completely different element to the Premier League this season, as we've already seen. Like,
confidence is such an important thing. You know, winning the Championship and coming up and continuing to believe in your players and play the same way sort of instills that confidence. You need the results early on. That result against Man City will just boost them so much. I remember at Reading when we came up years ago, we used to play 4-4-2 in the Championship. We went to the Premier League, whenever we going to switch now and go defensive. Didn't matter who we played, we went for it. We'd lose some, but we'd win some, and we scored plenty of goals. Very enjoyable. So Norwich seem to be going the same sort of way. You know, they believe in their system. They accept they're going to concede goals, but if they play well, in fact, they're full of confidence after winning loads of games last season and scoring loads of goals. It's a sort of, you know, roller coaster. You bounce along, you feed off that confidence, and it can become more difficult as time goes on and teams start to figure you out and find you out, but while it's working, it's fantastic.
Mick mentioned Aston Villa there. They're playing Arsenal this weekend. I can't remember seeing a game like that Arsenal-Watford game at the weekend. The last 20 minutes or so of that, it was unbelievable. Watford, I think, so I saw one stat that said the year of the Invincibles, Arsenal conceded something like 252 shots in the entire season. After five games, they've conceded over 90 shots already, and over, I think, 30 of them were against Watford on Sunday. That second half by Arsenal, what has gone on there with a team that can just collapse so quickly? And like, yeah. Granit Xhaka was talking after the game about he didn't really know what's happening. He's the captain. Like, it's up to the likes of him to kind of stand up in the middle of that game and say, lads, what's going on here? We need to get our heads together.
Yeah, I don't know. That's why Emery was sort of brought in, to be that, you know, that manager who has them solid, that one who makes them a little bit ugly at times and makes them defensively strong. And that wasn't the case at the weekend. He has made them better. He has made them tighter, but they're still prone to that sort of performance. I can't believe, you know, how could you look? We're so comfortable 2-0 up. Game's over. And Watford have gone again and made the managerial change and seem to have got a fantastic bounce from it. The players can't explain it, and we certainly can't explain it. You don't know what is going on in that dressing room or what's happening on the pitch, that they can be so comfortable at once, they can, it all goes tits up after 20
exactly,
minutes.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, I'm not really, I'm trying to think of a time when I've been involved in a game like that and everything goes so, so wrong. I'm sure people will tell me there's been a few, but I can't put my finger on one right now. I suppose, listen, when the other team, they're at home, Watford, and they're getting the run, or they scored a goal and they get back into it 2-1 and they're going for it, and it just bamboozled Arsenal for 20 minutes and they just couldn't get their foot back on the ball. They couldn't do anything to stop Watford's momentum. And they didn't seem to have someone on the pitch who was going to fall over and get injured and roll around for 10 minutes just to, you know, kill the game or do something. That experience that seemed to be able to make that decision or be the one in charge who was going to, you know, bring the ball into the corner flag and cause a bit of a row and make the referee book a few people and slow the game down and stop it for 10 minutes just so you know, right back and get the ball and figure it out. It just wasn't there for
The one game on Sunday that I think people aren't talking about naturally is the Palace Wolves game, Kevin. Two of your old teams, I know briefly enough with Palace, but both of them got a kind of a bit of a hiding at the weekend. But Wolves in particular, like we talked a little bit about them last week, I'm waiting for them to kind of catch last year's form. I thought they might give Chelsea a bit of a scare last week, you know, and they kind of were limp enough. Like, I know there's a few issues there. Like, you know, you'd expect maybe Matt Doherty will come in instead of Traore and that'll kind of shore it up. You know, there's a few little things that they can change, but like, it just doesn't seem like everything is just going as smoothly as it did last season.
No, it's tough. This is their first sort of spell under Nuno Gomez, that sort of, I suppose, he's under a little bit of pressure. Wolves fans will give him time, but I'm already hearing murmurs of, you know, this thing is not working this season and spend a lot of money and there's time for a change, which isn't. He seems to have the players, you know, loving him. He seems to be a very good manager, what I see in here. You know, he's just going through a sticky spell. No one can put an exact reason behind it. Sometimes it just happens, and they're not, you know, I was like you last week, I think it's a Chelsea tough game. Anyone going there, it's very difficult, and they play a really good football, but just hasn't happened this week, this season. You know, I was predicting them for outsider for top six, and if they start playing very well very soon, that's going to be gone out the window. But a lot of people were thinking the same thing. I don't know, the manager, he's not going to be able to sign anyone, obviously. So, what did he do? Matt Doherty is not, you know, he's going to come in. He's a right wing back. Like, he's not going to make massive difference to the team. He's bringing confidence going forward more so than defensively. So, you know, he's not going to stop them conceding goals. It's just another one for the manager to try to figure out. But hopefully, he's given time, because I don't know what the Wolves owners are. But since they've come in, they haven't really had to make any big decisions apart from signing players, because everything's been going so well on the pitch. I just hope they don't pull any triggers anytime soon and they give the manager time to sort that out.
One other game just that has caught our eye ahead of the weekend is obviously Leicester City against Spurs, and Spurs in particular it was almost a time of crisis within two games this season, between players possibly leaving, Pochettino as well, maybe getting sick of the transfer situation there too. But one guy who there wasn't much talk about between, you know, Eriksen and Kane will always grab the headlines, but Son again at the weekend was absolutely brilliant. He is a player that seemed to only really shine when Kane was almost injured. A lot of the time he'd be at his best, but this last weekend he was back. The two of them can work together, and both hit form at the same time. He's a player that I think could maybe even eclipse Kane in terms of goals he gets this season.
Well, if you remember in the build up to the Champions League final, there were some people hoping that Kane wouldn't fit, that Spurs would play better without him. I wouldn't be in that group. I think Harry Kane got, I think it's 14 goals in 18 Champions League games, or 16 goals in 18 Champions League games the last couple of years. So listen, he's a fantastic player. The two of them playing well together, that's what Pochettino hasn't, I suppose, had, or Kane is taking on the headlines. You know, I find it weird at first. Pochettino has always seems to be just gone cryptic or something the last three, 4, 6 months, whether he was trying to get more funds out of him in the summer for transfers, or he genuinely wanted to leave or whatever, but he wouldn't be instilling confidence in me if I was a player there regarding him going to be around too much longer. He's, you know, he seems to be questioning things in interviews, saying things that managers don't usually say about maybe level of investment and different things if they're happy at clubs. So that'd be my worry for Spurs. I don't think he's going to be there too much longer, to be honest. I think he's just hoping to get that big move to Madrid or Barcelona. It hasn't happened yet, but you just worry about his interviews and the way he speaks, that is that sooner rather than later when he's going to be in charge.
Is that something, if you are a player, that you're kind of paying attention to? You know, obviously there's so much media coverage around every team that, you know, sometimes you might try to black it out or not pay much attention to it. But if there are things like that, does it start to actually seep into the camp and lads discuss them with each other, what's going on?
They won't say it publicly, but I think they'll be discussing it in the dressing room. Did you see what the gaffer said at the weekend? Did you see that interview or whatever? They'll know, I suppose, more from his demeanour at training, whether it shows, you know, when he's a two-bag, if he changed anyway. But you would be. You'd definitely be talking about, you know, did you see someone, not all players might read the papers, but one or two will, and they'll say in the dressing room, and there'll be discussion about it. So it's definitely, you know, they would never admit it, just never say it. It has to a little bit, you know, whether you think you're going to see yourself at long term, whether you listen to the manager or don't listen to the manager, regarding your future, if you think he's not going to be there himself, it's harder to faith or trust in your coach if you think he's also looking for an out. So it definitely has to have some sort of effect.
Before we let you go, Kevin, your treble last week, you didn't get none of them landed, but at the same time you were one goal away from each of them landing. So
give value for money for people, you know, got more of excitement maybe.
What
the Man City one was I think everyone got it wrong, as you said. That was hard one to call, but actually, I didn't give that in the treble last week, did I?
The Burnley?
It's all predictable, so
Burnley to win, that ended a draw. United and Leicester to be a draw, that was 1-0 win for United. And Southampton and Sheffield to be a draw, and again, 1-0 for Southampton. So you were only a goal out with each of them, but it was still, on paper, it didn't look great.
We were still alive after 50 minutes. We just needed a goal in each game,
What have you got for us this week?
I'm sitting on the fence with the draws. I need to come out and be a bit more positive. A few wins out this week, I think.
What have you got?
Right, so I'm going to go give a bit. There should be good odds on Sheffield United away to Everton. A win for Sheffield United. 92. Yeah, I'm going to go with Man City this week now. Bounce back against Watford at home. Listen, it should be. It's not going to give people much value, but it's. I want to get on the board with one, right?
Board, yeah.
And I will say Spurs to win away to Leicester.
Oh, that's decent value there as well. That's 13-10.
Yeah.
So that comes up to 13.34-1. That's not a bad treble either.
Right. There we go. This is some interesting game. Spurs Leicester one, I think, is going to be a good game of the goals in that. Spurs seem to have got a little bit of confidence in the last few weeks, so.
Yeah, exactly. That Man City game as well. But Watford, remember shots Watford had, and the fact City beat them 6-0 last time.
If Sheffield United beat Everton and your bet comes off, Kevin, we're going to be talking to you next week about a crisis at Goodison Park, because things aren't going too well there.
There's a crisis everywhere every week. So, gives us something to talk about.
Exactly. Absolutely. Thanks very much, Kevin.
All right, no worries. Thanks.
That's not a bad treble, Mick.
I like it.
Leicester-Tottenham, I'm worried about.
Leicester-Tottenham's a good old, you know, it's a Carling Cup final from the early 2000s. That's the way for some of the... You know, some matches just have places in your head that'll always occupy.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a derby of a player who played for both teams, like Les Ferdinand.
Yeah.
I'm jumping, but more for... I always think of these two as a...
It's also like a team... It's like a FIFA... challenge match against a friend where like these are, you know, what team will we pick this time, and then you're looking at what the other person picks, and then someone picks Tottenham and you're like, oh, I'll not pick a Liverpool or a Man City because they're a wee bit too good. I'll go Leicester, and it's like, oh, that's an interesting matchup. And you have a load of crack.
I like a lot of the treble though, and also after talking to Kevin there, I didn't realise, even after they beat Man City, but it's just talking about them for 10 minutes, I didn't realise how, after watching the drudgery of Monday Night Football this week when Villa got a nil-all draw at West Ham, and as much as I'm still on board with the Villa machine and I'm going to watch every game, I didn't realise how excited I am by having a team like Norwich in the Premier League.
Yep, and funny enough, remember in the very first episode of the build-up, we talked about fantasy football, and I told people to stay away from Norwich players for the first few weeks of the season, because even though they're very good and the team is very good, they have a really tough run of fixtures to start off with, and they're not going to get a lot of points.
Yeah.
Timo Pukki is possibly the greatest player of all time. Cantwell's getting goals every other minute as well. Guess what? The fixtures I was looking at are finished now. So yeah, they actually have a great run of fixtures coming up.
Yeah.
So
they're playing Burnley this weekend. Like, yeah,
they could be easily still in the top half of the table come next in a month or two's time.
They're the top goal scorer in the Premier League, and they've got the top assists in the Premier League, and two different players.
There you go.
Yeah.
They're not on the 1-2-3 pick. Their matchup this weekend against who do we say they're playing against?
Burnley.
This weekend isn't part of 1-2-3. If you've never heard of 1-2-3 before, it's a game you can play on ladbrokes.com or indeed in store every week. It's absolutely free to play. They will give you three fixtures from this weekend's Premier League matches, and all you have to do is correctly predict the score of all three. If you get one of them right, you win a euro free bet. If you get two of them, you win a €5 free bet. And if you get all three, you win €100 cash. Mick, how did you get on last week?
Summed up my week in general, except outside of my NFL brilliance. I didn't get any for the first time in a good while. At Everton, won all, I thought maybe, but no, Bournemouth hammered them.
I had a Euro free bet from the week before, put it on the draw at Dublin and Kerry, didn't come in. But this week I'm confident that I'm going to win the €100. That's it. No free bets, no nothing. I'm going straight for the €100 cash.
I used my Euro free bet again less successfully than my massive 11 team accumulator this week by putting it on an NFL accumulator that I never even checked how it did on Sunday, because it was all over on Thursday after Carolina lost to Tampa Bay. So the minute I put it on, it was gone.
So this week's games, first up, Mick, I'm going to ask you about picking the right score between Newcastle and Brighton. Newcastle at home.
As I said on the 1-2-3 video that you can see on site and on Balls.ie social this week, I'm going for 2-1 to Brighton, because do you know why? I like that they were very unlucky not to beat Burnley last week, as we know. I think that they've gone back to the back four. I like that. I think it suits the players that they have a little bit more, even if it doesn't suit the manager. Mope got off on the score sheet. Newcastle have been fine. Like, that's you know, you have to be honest and say that, like, as much as we all kind of, you know, try to, you know, make reality our predictions. Newcastle haven't been as bad as we all predicted they were, and we have to be honest about that. But they're still not setting the world on fire or anything like it, you know. So I think that Brighton will just scrape a win there 2-1.
I'm going for a big dirty 0-0 in that. Nice. Sean Meehan, who was in with us last week, I got his 1-2-3 predictions as well. He's going for 2-1 to Brighton. So
same as yourself.
Yep. So lads, I don't know. I can see Newcastle, this will be one of the newest players to get a couple of points. And I think Brighton will be happy enough for the nil-all draw. Next one up is West Ham against Manchester United. The crisis-ridden Manchester United, who are in the top four. Like, it's one of those things, you just look at it and you go, Jesus, this team that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was nearly on the way out already, they're actually doing all right all of a sudden. If they get a penalty every game, that is.
Yeah. Like, I mean, would you be... They beat Leicester, right? Which is the type of game that you can't... You have to be delighted no matter what way you do it. But watching it, like, do you really go and say, geez, I can't wait for next week, this team is back? They were lucky to get the win. They got an early penalty and hung on. I think that West Ham at home... West Ham have been pretty good this year. They were, like... I didn't realise how much a better team quality-wise they would be than Aston Villa until watching it on Monday night. Now, they didn't threaten Villa too much. They never looked likely to score, but just their general play, Rice and Noble in midfield were brilliant. Lanzini, Anderson, I think your man up front,
who your guy from Fancy Football, Haller. I couldn't decide whether it was Haller or Haller. You know, these guys are serious players. It's a good team. United aren't going to beat them. I don't think they will. I'm going for 1-1.
I'm going for 1-0 West Ham. And right. Haller to score, because I'm probably going to sell him for Tammy Abraham. So you can chalk that one down as a 1-0 win to West Ham. Sean Meehan went for 2-1 United. So we've got three people. And we're
so one of us will probably be right.
Exactly. And finally, the big game of the weekend, Chelsea at home to Liverpool. Both teams lost on Tuesday night in the Champions League. Both teams like to score goals and they like to take a lot of shots.
They do. Well, Chelsea didn't score the other night, though, and neither did Liverpool. So I'm going for nil all. No, I'm not. I think Liverpool will find a way of winning this game. I don't think Chelsea are, you know, I don't think Chelsea are going to be the ones to stop them this year in much the same way as that. Like, you know, we all bigged up the Arsenal match. You know, it was like, oh, God, Liverpool, that's a really big test for them. And then it kind of wasn't. You know, I know it's a difference between home and away, but I like Liverpool to win this. I'll say 2-1 actually, but I think it'll be more comfortable than that scoreline suggests.
Yeah, I think there's going to be goals in it. Like I said, this was my game for the 1-2-3 video we did. That is, as you mentioned, make up on site and on social. I went with 3-2 to Liverpool. I think it's going to be plenty of goals. I think it'll be 3-1 possibly, and Chelsea to get another goal to bring it back to 3-2.
Similar enough to me.
Yeah, the Super Cup game between the two of them was actually really enjoyable up until extra time when everybody was out on their feet. And Sean went for 4-3 to Liverpool. He went and he put in brackets humdinger after it. So if it's 4-3, I think we'll all be very happy. That'll be a great game to watch. But look at that's our 1-2-3 picks. Like, as I mentioned, if you want to play yourself, get on to ladbrokes.com right now. You can play for absolutely free. And if you win the €100 cash, be sure to let us know. Tweet us at @BallsDOTAE and we will share the good news with everybody else on the podcast. But up next, it's time to get hyped.
So when you see Dre, a DJ on the mic, ask what it's like we're getting hyped tonight. Because if a strike, it ain't for you.
Get hyped, Mick. Guess what I'm getting you hyped about this week?
Well, it is you. And your current obsession is the noble sport of golf. So I'm going to suggest that it might have something to do with the BMW Championship that's on this weekend.
The BMW PGA Championship. We talked about the... I got hyped for the BMW Championship a month ago or so. And now guess what? There's another one. At this time, they put a few more letters onto it to make it different from the last. Yes, it is the return of the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth this weekend.
What a course.
What a course. What a lineup. There's a serious field. Now, I'm kind of getting you hyped at this whilst also in the background, in my subconscious, trying to make my mind up about the picks I have for it, because I have a lot and I don't know which one to go with. But just to explain, BMW PGA, it's happening this weekend in Wentworth. It's part of the Road to Dubai. Shane Lowry currently tops that leaderboard. That's going to be happening next month. That'll be kind of all coming to a close. You've got an all-star lineup, and I'll tell you one thing. Shane Lowry is in with every chance in this. So that's another reason to get hyped for it. So Francesco Molinari won it last year. The two of them are the two standouts for me at the minute. But then you've also got the curveball of Alexander Noren. So if you look at the three of these, right? Lowry last year finished 15th. Wasn't his best year, but before that he finished 6th, missed the cut, finished 6th, finished 12th, finished 2nd, then finished 12th, but was 5th good into the final day. So that's his last 6 years or so. And that third year, it seems to be an anomaly in these. We're going to pretend that year didn't happen for all these three lads, right?
Okay.
Molinari, last year, 1st. Year before, 2nd. Year before, 55th. That's that third year again. 6th, 46th, 7th, 5th. Noren, 3rd last year. 1st the year before. 43rd for that third year again. 8th, didn't finish. Had to withdraw, and then he doesn't have a great Noren after those years before that. But like, there's a couple of lads here who are clear standouts, as in these, because again, it's like the Masters, it's got the same course every year. It's at Wentworth. Lowry is, I was kind of doing that thing that I like to do where because I haven't got a clue, I'll read everybody else who actually knows stuff about the sport and see what they're saying. A lot of people are going with Shane Lowry. He's 30-1 with Ladbrokes at the minute. Noren's 33-1 and Molinari is 28-1. So this is what I'm saying in terms of me not being able to decide who to go with in the end.
Yeah.
I like Molinari.
Go for the three of them.
Maybe.
They're big prices, like.
Yeah, the three. But then the problem is that I have two outside bets, which is like outside 33 to 1. You know, if you're, look, if you want
if
something
of,
a little
if one
fruity,
of the three of them are going to win, you're going to come on the podcast going, I called it, I said it.
Yeah. Bernd Weisberger, who I think finished second in the Irish Open, is also second on the leaderboard for the race to Dubai.
Great name.
Did I call it the road to Dubai earlier on? That shows you. I think it's better. I just realised now. Like, I didn't even mean to say it.
Yeah, that's the World Cup build up in you. So like, we love a road to something in a World Cup, road, don't we?
But
or an Olympics.
Weisberger is second to Lowry in the leaderboard at the minute for the race to Dubai. He's 35 to 1 going into this. And Robert McIntyre. Robbie McIntyre, who I like to say, good Scottish lad, is 66 to 1. A lot of people tipping him. He did well in the Open, I remember as well, because remember
he did okay in the Open. Yeah, he was alive. I had him in the one of the team had him in the sweepstakes, yeah, and we were keep paying attention to him, and he was the leading Scot anyway for a while.
So this is why I've come to an actual, rather than just going here's a load of random golfers and mad prices, right? I was looking Ladbrokes, they have the hashtag get a price specials, and they have a hashtag get a price special on Molinari to be the top Italian and McIntyre to be the top Scot at 9 to 2.
Wow.
So that's an actual solid, just over 4 to 1 bet that is not kind of finger in the air stuff, and it could be any one of these 75 lads to win the tournament.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not as up to date in golf as I used to be, but who's in contention to stop them?
Some other Italians and a few Scots.
Is Eduardo Molinari, the brother, still knocking around, no?
I believe you've got Colin Montgomery, isn't he Scottish?
Sandy Lyle.
He might be playing. There's that lad, what's his name? Gennaro Gattuso, he was up in Scotland with Rangers. I don't know if he's playing golf
is
now.
Is old Tom Morris or young Tom Morris still knocking around?
Who knows?
I think they might be English, actually. I've looked up the 2016, I feel like I don't pull my weight enough in this in these golf chats. So I looked up the 2016 BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth to see what was going on that was such an anomaly. It was, I don't know, it was only 9 under was the winning score, so maybe that had something
that's
to do with it.
Low, yeah.
That's hot, like a...
Sorry, that's...
high. Yeah. So maybe it was weather. Chris Wood from England, anyway, won it a 9 under. Rickard Karlberg. So
there you go. You mentioned Gennaro Gattuso. It's not been unknown for a footballer to win this BMW PGA Championship.
Rickard Karlberg from Sweden, 8 under. Danny Willett, 7 under, probably the biggest name in top five. Aiken, Wattle, Quesnay, and then Beef Johnson and Martin Kaymer down in 7th. That was before Beef Johnson was... I suppose beef. So that was a weird year. I kind of agree with you. So your trends, they check out, Mark. It's not as if it came in that Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods were up at the top of that leaderboard.
Exactly. And Beef Johnson's another person people are talking about again this week, but I couldn't go with him after having a big shout at him a few weeks ago. And I was like, I'm going to have to draw the line here. I can't mention every single golfer taking part. I think I'm going to cut Noren, right? I'm going to go with Lowry at 30 to 1. Molinari at 28 to 1,
and these are each way bets, by the way.
Yeah, of course. And maybe Bernd Weisberger. We let them go on. We'll throw Bernd in, and they're 50 cent each way at 35 to 1. And then obviously we said Molinari would be the top Italian, Robert McIntyre would be the top Scot, and I can't name a single Scot or other Italian golfer who's taking part. It's most maybe they're the only people in it.
This is great. Okay, so tell me, like, so we've got these golfers to look out for. We've got the race to Dubai to worry about. We've got an Irish guy who we're tipping, and he's leading the race to Dubai. It's at Wentworth, kind of like it's. I love tournaments that are at the same place every year. There's so few of them. You know, you have the Masters, you have the TPC at Sawgrass, you have this, one or two others around the world. I love that. So I am hyped.
Good stuff. Mick, you're like the cat that got the cheese. Is that the phrase? Or the mouse that
cream?
Got the cheese. The cat that got the cream and the mouse that got the cheese. It's been a long day.
Is that Tipperary cream?
Tipperary cream. Cream mortar, if anyone who's watching Room to Improve. NFL picks. You know everything there is to know about the sport. This is like, see, I professed that I knew nothing about golf and then happened to get a load of things right. So my knowledge of this is kind of, it's always a little bit tainted by my own fact, the fact that I myself declare that I know nothing. You've been letting on to know a lot about NFL. You could be bluffing, but you've made it through the first couple of weeks with a clean slate. You've got your three picks last week. They all came off against the spread.
Yeah.
You're coming back for more this week.
Yeah, that's not easy now, I have to say. I'm a good man for 2-1 in these three picks against the spread. It's not easy to get the three of them together. You're generally looking, like, it always depends as well between kind of what way the spread has been bet, but you're generally looking at about a 6-1 bet if you're going with a treble against the spread. Yeah. So I'm going to do that each week. It's been a good start. But, you know, it's not going to come off every week, but hopefully more than 1 out of 6 will come true and will keep you up for the year. Now, this week, Mark, I've got a little bit brave because trends are an interesting thing come week 3, week 4, week 5 of the NFL season. We're heading into week 3 now. This is actually the only chance you have really to kind of be ahead of Las Vegas, as they call it in America, who kind of set the spreads, set the odds, and obviously everybody else follows. This is my only chance in this podcast to beat Ladbrokes for a few weeks, it's just before these trends kind of settle and everybody kind of knows exactly if they're for real or not.
It's
can trust your eyes for a few weeks.
It's like, know? Before, probably not this year because they kind of copped onto it, but before everybody copped on to the fact that Dublin in the early rounds of the Leinster Championship and even in the Super 8s are going to win every game by over 14 points.
Yeah.
And you were getting spreads like -8. And you're like, Jesus, should they'll double that.
Exactly. Now, here's the thing though. I'm going a bit brave, but like, they've copped on as much as they can possibly cop on to a couple of things this week. One is that the New England Patriots win games very easily for some reason. So they beat the Steelers in the first game 33-3. I think they won 43-0.
It was over 40 anyway.
Yeah, this week against the Dolphins. So I'm taking the Patriots side of things and I'm taking the Dolphins side of things. The Dolphins are the worst professional football team I've ever seen. And I've been watching this fairly in-depth for the vast majority of this century.
It was funny, last week when I was doing the big shout where I had predicted I was actually off air, I was like, Patriots -19.5. Would you go with that against the Dolphins? Would you risk 21? Would you risk maybe going up as far as 22.5, 23.5? You were like, the Patriots could win this game 60-0. And they weren't far off.
I did actually say that. However, I was also urging caution because massive spreads in the NFL are so dangerous, no matter what the talent discrepancy is between the teams, because you have big leads. It's not really in the culture to be running up the score on purpose. You might put in your backups. There's a lot of garbage time scores that can be had, and spreads get a little bit messed up the bigger they are when there is a bigger gap in the thing. So if a game is over at halftime, you really can't be sure you're going to beat the spread, especially when they get big. And over 20 points is really, really rare. But we have 2 of them this week. And unusually, I would be such a stay-away merchant from these, but unusually, given what I've seen over the last couple of weeks, I'm going for both of them. So that is the Dallas Cowboys, who've started really well this year. They beat the Giants. They beat the Redskins. They look like they're a really good contender in the NFC. They're at home to the Miami Dolphins. It's such a mismatch. It's going to be very similar to what we've seen. That was a home game for them against the Patriots this week, and they lost 43-0. Now they're going to Dallas for this one. I can't see how they keep it under 30 points. Again, it's a dangerous one, but I'm going Dallas -22. For the Patriots then, they're playing the Jets, their old rivals. They've beaten the Jets, I think, something like 8 times in a row at home. They play them every year. They're in the same division. And the Jets, people were hoping for the best a little bit with the Jets this year. But Sam Darnold, go on.
I have news.
Yes.
This will be my last ever show. I have now been called up to be the Jets quarterback.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
you've got the Patriots this week, and their defense is really good this year. They've conceded 3 points in 2 games. They haven't conceded a touchdown yet this year, and the Jets have 2 injured quarterbacks. Trevor Siemian, their backup to Sam Darnold, who got mono, is out. I actually am not even sure who the new guy is. I looked him up, had never heard of him.
He's got stereo.
And forgot his name. So we've got a new quarterback in there. The Jets in general, though, like, you know, they haven't even lived up to what they were hoping for this year, which is a kick on year. They lost a 16-point lead to the Bills in the first game and lost the game. They were hammered on Monday night by the Browns, even though the Browns didn't play well and have been disappointing this year. So I don't see how in New England, in Foxborough, they're going to be able to keep it down. And that's the Patriots -22.5. Is it a worry that it's so big? Yes. do I think, based on what I've seen in the last 2 weeks for both teams, I think it can happen. And then I'm just going to throw in with that, that the Chicago Bears are on the road against the Washington Redskins on Monday night. They're -3.5. It's one of those games there'll be more Bears fans than there will be Redskins fans at it. And the Redskins have started off where they've looked okay in both games, but have been well beaten both times, you know, and the Bears will, you know, they'll stick in there. They're not at their best, but their defense is really, really good, won't give up anything, and I think they'll end up winning by a touchdown. So they're -3.5 in that game. So that's Dallas -22, New England -22.5, and Chicago -3.5, which is, I guarantee you, the biggest load of points that you'll have to trust me on for the entire season. I'll be a little bit more careful after this week.
And just go back to that Jets quarterback with the mono. For some of you who obviously you'd hear that phrase an awful lot, but aren't really sure what that illness is, if the Simpsons taught us anything, it's that mono means one and rail means rail. So there you go.
Yeah, there you go. And you get mono from kissing, apparently. If you've watched enough teenage American TV shows over the years, you'll know that that's the kissing disease.
He's got a dose of the cooties.
But it's good, though, because the Jets have always had a problem scoring. So it's a really... It's
hey, on that note, let's finish this segment. Mick, I don't know what. I need to take a little... I'm going to go have a cold shower, and then we're going to come back for the big shout.
All right, hold it. Steady. Just hold it, Alan.
Push him out.
Steady, David, don't! Get round. No, don't! Bloody!
Before we go, the big shout. Everybody's chance to win 2 cakes and a sports biography. You've been sending them in. None of them have come off yet, and none of ours have come off. So who are we to criticise? Last week, like I mentioned, we mentioned in the look back, I went for the Patriots to beat the handicap. That worked. I went for Liverpool to be ahead after 60 minutes. That worked. And I went for Kerry and Dublin to be a draw. That did not work, which means that I have been booted out of the task of calling the big shout. This week, it's your turn. You have the opportunity to win yourself 2 cakes and a sports biography. Go. What have you got?
Give me one week at it, and I'll soon hand back the reins, I'm sure. But I'll tell you what I'm going for. Man City beaten last week. I think they'll have a kick in their tail. What happened the last time they played Watford? In the FA Cup final.
They beat them 6-0.
Why can't they do it again?
Because Watford have the third most shots in the Premier League. Yeah. All of them came against Arsenal, which is funny enough.
exactly. Arsenal. You're right.
Mr. Quiche Flores is back. He's got a tremendous beard. He's got tremendous hair. He's very excited. Doucouré is the greatest footballer that has ever been. Etienne Capoue is brilliant. He answers as many questions as he wants on Sky Sports and then tells them, get that other lad to answer this one because I can't be arsed anymore. I really fall deeply in love with Watford. And Troy Deeney in his spare time decides just to go on Soccer Saturday and become one of the panel, because
Pereira,
why not?
Pereira also scored his first goal since... Kike Sanchez was manager last time, I think. I think it was since 2018.
If just on this note, before we go off, because you know we're going to talk about Watford and Man City, but if listen to we've got the football show, the Buzz City football show every Monday. We went in depth exploring the most Arsenal of Arsenals that happened on Sunday. It was incredible.
And that's why it was so Arsenal. And that's why I'm not putting much stock into Watford's improved performance. And I would argue that if City are on their game, as if Liverpool are on their game, it doesn't really matter what Watford or how Watford have improved or not. This is at home for Man City as well. And look, I'm not saying they're going to win 6-0. I'm saying it's a big shout. That only comes to 22-1 on Ladbrokes. So I've had to throw in a Sergio Aguero. It's
only 22-1.
Sergio Aguero, anytime goal scorer in there to get it over 25, which, by the way, in case anybody's listening for the first time, that's the threshold of a big shout. It has to be at least 25-1. I've thrown in a double with Aguero to score. That pushes it up. He's like, you know, if City win 6-0, you'd expect Sergio Aguero to be among the goals. That pushes it up to 34-1. So it's a 34-1 big shout. Look,
it's not going to happen.
There's a good chance it happens. But I will say to you now that there's a better than 34-1 chance that this happens.
I would say no. I think I'm buying into Watford. And also, you're forgetting the fact that David Luiz never been up on Sunday, but his brother, Nicolas Otamendi, is going to be playing for Man City. And they've got no other centre-back. So there's a good chance that I'm going to have to double job on Sunday, playing quarterback for the Jets and centre-back for City.
John
I think
Stones.
We're actually playing on Saturday, so thank God.
John Stones can handle it. He'll be okay.
If you've got a big shout yourself, be sure to email thegaffer@balls.ie. You can win yourself 2 cakes and a sports biography. Your shout has to be 25-1 or greater. It obviously has to come into us before the event happens. And if it comes off, you will win that someday. Unbelievable prize. Thanks very much to everyone who has listened to today's show. It's nearly time to go. If you are having any bets at the weekend, be sure to gamble responsibly, and you can visit dunlewy.net for more information. But that's it, Mick. I have to go. Don't come at me with any more
sport. Hold on, there's Formula One.
There's no time, Mick.
What about
focus?
What about college football?
Club
football.
The club championship. There's a big weekend in the club championship, all right. There's actually four games you should check out this weekend. They're up on balls.ie.
I totally sucked them in again.
Stop it, yeah. We need to go. If you're not subscribed yet, search The Build-Up on balls.ie and all good podcast apps. You can subscribe there. And if you are subscribed, then why don't you give us a 5-star rating? We'd really, really appreciate it. But until we chat to you again next week, mind yourself.